Welcome to the Community Action League. The Community Action League is a weekly show that is a collaborative effort of local organizations and nonprofits. Our goal is to raise awareness of issues that impact people in Gallatin County, like consent, housing, transportation, human rights, and addiction. We also discuss the organizations that listeners can engage with that are relevant to those topics. On our show, we discuss the intersectionality or connections between these topics at the local, national, and global levels. If you're interested, you can tune in to KGBM 95.9 Bozeman to learn about issues impacting your community every Thursday at 7 p.m. And if you have a topic you'd like to hear about or comments about our show, feel free to contact us at communityactionleague@gmail.com to request a topic or share your thoughts. So today we're actually going to be talking about helping our veterans here in the Bozeman community. And I'm joined by three fabulous people doing this work, Eric Beal, Krista Ziegler, and Renee Boundy. Did I slaughter your name?
You did not slaughter my name. Renee Boundy, I'm the court coordinator for the Veterans Treatment Court out of the Bozeman Municipal Court in Bozeman.
Fantastic. And before we move on, can you just tell us in a few minute or two what exactly that means?
The Veterans Treatment Court is a court that takes both felony and municipal offenses of veterans, so veterans involved in the justice system, and works on the theory that it is much better to keep people in the community and working on treatment issues rather than incarcerating them, which I say theory, but also the evidence-based practice of keeping people in the community and providing treatment options.
Fantastic. And Krista, you're with Volunteers of America. Will you want to tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do over there and all that?
Hi, yeah, my name is Krista Ziegler. I am the Supportive Services for Veterans Family Coordinator over in Bozeman. And so what we do is we work with veterans and their families that are homeless or that are facing homelessness. And we provide them with housing, temporary financial assistance, help them get back on their feet, provide a hands, we call it a hands up, not a hands, or
handout,
yeah. And then just help them get on their feet, help them find jobs and become self-sufficient.
Fantastic, I love that. And then we also have Eric Beal, and Eric, you're over at Job Services, I believe. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, hi, I'm Eric. I am the Veterans Representative at the Job Service, but more officially, I guess you could say my title is DVOP. It's D-V-O-P, which stands for Disabled Veteran Outreach Program Manager. Essentially, it means that I help disabled veterans find employment, but the way my job is structured, I'm half-time DVOP, the other half is employment specialist, so I can work with any veteran. It doesn't just have to be disabled. I can just, you know, in our system, just, you know, change a hat in theoretically, so that helps them out. And yeah, so that's why I do the Job Service. Think of me as the Veterans Representative.
So let's just get started with talking about maybe the scope of veterans issues here in our community. Does one of you want to tell us a little bit about how many veterans are in our community?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, one of the biggest things is, well, I'll first start saying the unemployment rate is fantastic in Gallatin County. I mean, it roughly goes from 1.9 to 2.3 depending on the month. I would say the biggest thing for veterans right now is housing. I mean, it's a tight market left and right. Depending if you're making, you know, $50,000 a year, it does not guarantee that you actually will have find housing. So that's a lot of stuff that we see. I mean, I had veterans coming in who are, they're moving from out of state, they want to come in here, and the first thing I ask them is like, do you have housing? Do you have some place to live? Because the jobs, you can find a job left and right here, depending, I mean, working at the front desk to CAO positions, it's everything available. But I always stress is, where are you living? Are you going to be renting? Are you going to be living on someone's couches? You know, that kind of situations definitely help foster a sense of growth, because if those situations arrive, we know exactly who to call or who to help out with. So that's, I think, is one of the biggest things going on right now.
So with the housing situation with our veterans, what we're finding is that our vets will come in to see us, and their difficulty is their credit history, which is with landlords, that's one of their big things that they're looking for is, you know, they run their credit history. So we have to work with them and find them different resources that they can, you know, check their credit history or help them work on their credit. We also are finding with the rentals is their medical bills. If they are disabled, they vets have a lot of medical bills that they've got to be paying. And so we find that medical bills is a huge thing with credit. So we, with Volunteers of America, we try to keep in contact with our landlords to explain to them, these are the barriers that our vets are facing, but there are also barriers that can be, you know, that these vets can work on, especially when they have the assistance from our program with our temporary finances that we help with our vets.
Actually, a question for you is that, how are you seeing the homeowners, how receptive are they if you come in and say, hey, I have a veteran who needs a house, mm-hmm. like, are they like jumping through the hoops, absolutely, or do you see a little pushback comparative?
I would say 50-50. Yeah. What I find is we do have landlords that we work with on a constant, mm-hmm. you know, and it's great, and they understand what our vets are going through. We do have another 50% of landlords that it's more of, you know, it's, well, their credit history isn't good, or what's their rental history look like? They're not working at the moment. So I find that with our program, just doing that outreach and getting to talk to our landlords, mm-hmm. all of our property management, to say, hey, this is what our program does, and it's actually positive, and we actually work with a lot of community members. I think that's what's going to help our landlords get comfortable with renting to our mm-hmm. veterans that aren't working at the moment.
I guess one question I have is, speaking of housing issues, we know that our homeless population here in the Bozeman area seems to be growing. Would you say that there is a substantial percentage of that homeless population that is veterans? Is it especially hard for them to find housing, or is it just kind of similar for them as the rest of the community?
I take that. That's a difficult question, because veterans, for the majority, I don't want to pigeonhole everyone, but I'm a veteran myself, and we are a proud group of people. So there is, I volunteered at the warming center we have here during the winter months, and I mean, there's a few veterans that come in there, but I know for a fact a lot of them, they just don't want that community for whatever mental health issues that arise. It's just, that area is just too much for them. So homeless veterans is one of those things that you just don't see them out. They're proud, they're doing their own thing, they're got their own tent down by the river. They just don't come in necessarily unless there's a huge issue. They'll come in, and then that's when you find out they actually are homeless, that they need certain care. But they're a sign of the population. Mm-hmm. They are hard to find, and mm-hmm. I can't blame them. I mean, it's just a proud nature. Being in the military for at least 4 or 5 years, you pick up certain skills and certain demographics that you don't really want to tap someone's shoulder and say, hey, I need assistance right now. So, I mean, I guess that's with any city right now mm-hmm. with us.
Well, and Eric, when you talk about that they often don't come forward until they have a huge issue, are you generally talking medical issues, or are there other things that might come up? I mean, are these people that have families, individuals? What's kind of what do we see of our local population?
What we're seeing with our local population is we're seeing families with kids. Mm-hmm. We're seeing if the family if they're losing their jobs, they have rent that they have to pay, so they're going to be getting evicted. Especially with the weather and our winter that's coming, since we have such a harsh winter, mm-hmm. they are struggling with trying to make ends meet. So we're seeing that with needing their rent paid. Also, if, you know, vehicles, we have vets that have their vehicles break down and are unable to go to work because they can't get to work. So part of our program, we also offer assistance with helping them get their vehicles repaired so they can get to work. But that's some of the issues that we're seeing, is the harsh winters, the rent that they're unable to pay, and losing their jobs.
Well, and I'll say too, as far as the big problems that bring people into the system when we deal with people, is because they're involved in the justice system, and so they really certainly can opt into the program, but there's pretty significant consequences if they don't. And even then, it is hard for them to ask for help or to let us know what they need. It's just a hard population to mm-hmm. hit that way.
Mm-hmm. And Renee, just for clarification, when you say opt into the program, you're talking about the Vets Court
yes.
program, yes? And how is that different? I guess, what additional resources does that provide for a vet who is going through the justice system?
All right, so when you are involved in the justice system as a veteran in a way that is related to your service, so often we get addiction issues and PTSD issues are the biggest. You can opt to first get screened for the Veterans Court to see if it would be a good fit. If you choose to come into the Veterans Court, then you actually, the requirements are fairly strenuous or intense. You come to court once a week in the beginning. You meet with a case manager once a week who does a needs assessment and helps you with some of those ancillary services that we've been talking about. In addition, you participate in random testing, and you go to whatever treatment is recommended by your evaluation when you first enter the program. So that could be up to 3 support groups a week, certainly 1 therapy, sometimes 2, and other groups during the week as well that you participate. So when you start out, you probably have at least 10 hours of requirements. Also, services that we can provide. So that case manager that meets with you is able to look at housing and look at those kinds of issues as well.
I like that, and I hear you say case manager and then mention housing, and I immediately think of Krista. So it's fascinating. The 3 of you are going to come in and make this show today, and you know each other, right? And so I'm wondering, is there a good sense of interconnectedness in your jobs and your roles, and do you feel like you refer people back and forth pretty well or pretty frequently, and how do you all work together, or do you?
Of course we work together. I like to think of myself as a little bit of the focal point, because part of my job is also run a VSP meeting, which is a Veteran Service Provider meeting. We meet the last Friday of every month, and basically it's just a round robin table where everyone can just share current events that's going on, if you have an issue with a veteran that's coming up that you need help with. So that right there, I mean, Krista and Renee were both there pretty much every week, but not last month, right? Just kidding. So that's a good area for us to just communicate and, you know, definitely get phone numbers. We know if we have an issue with housing, I know to go certainly, and I know with legal issues, I know where I can go with a veteran there. So I think that is really good. A lot of communities don't have that. I mean, the larger ones in Montana do, but the smaller ones, say, like, you know, in like Livingston itself, they don't have anything like that. But for Gallatin Valley, we're really fortunate that we definitely have that interconnectedness that we can talk to anyone about any issue and know exactly how to get it fixed. So
these meetings, Eric, they're awesome. There's so much information when we go to these meetings. What's so awesome about it is that there's so many different veteran representatives. And so if we need a question answered, say if we need assistance that we're unable to provide, we can just reach out and say, well, this is what the situation is, and what can we do for help? And everybody there is willing to just say, yeah, let's do this, let's all work together. So it's so great. We all get to know each other. Mm-hmm. And so when, you know, certain people aren't at the meetings, Eric, we know they're not there.
Yeah. I list.
And I love the collaboration, because I think that is so important, because a person in any situation who's in a vulnerable place in their life often needs connection to more than just one service, and it's hard to seek it out in the first place. And if you can find one person who can help you with, you know, help navigate the justice system, and then they also recognize the other issues that you might be needing help with, that's fantastic. Would you say that it's a large group of people that is part of this? I mean, is it just the 3 of you that gets together, or is
no.
it
no.
a big group?
I would say the 3 of us get pretty boring. No, so I have roughly 20 to 30 people that show up in attendance mm-hmm. for the meetings, but I have an email list of all the providers, which is over 100 different emails. So if you know, even if they're not there for the meeting, the information is still digested and I broadcast to everyone else. So it's still, if you can't make the meeting, you still get information passed on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Eric's really good at sending emails out to everybody on what, you know, if we've missed or if there's just something that we didn't feel that we knew that was covered, that was covered. But hey, Eric, correct me if I'm wrong, are vets allowed to come to these meetings just to be, to like watch and see what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anyone can come. I mean, the meeting is targeted for service providers, but if you know a veteran that wants to be more intertwined with the information going on, they're absolutely allowed to come.
That sounds fantastic, but how would they know where to go?
There you go, the million-dollar question. So the meetings are held the last Friday of every month, except November, if Thanksgiving falls before that, because everyone's too full and don't want to come into the meeting. But it's last Friday of every month, 7:30 at the Bozeman Job Service.
So talking about these meetings, are there people that come to your meetings that don't serve just vets, but that's a portion of what they do? Does that make sense? Feel free to take a minute to think.
Yes, absolutely. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. We do have organizations that come that aren't just veterans. They help a wide range of population. Can't think of it off the top of my head, but they do come.
Like Love Inc.
Love Inc. You know, I'm not sure if I can say the name, but
you can. I guess, and then another kind of going off on another tangent, one thing that I had noticed is, Krista, I was talking to you before our show today, and you were mentioning something about what Volunteers of America does is works with veterans and their families. And do any of you want to talk about some of those services for their families, or is most of it just geared directly towards the veterans themselves?
Well, in the court, if there were family issues that came up, then we would certainly support working those out. I do know also that Community Health Partners has a family engagement specialist for fathers and for veteran fathers, and that's a new program that I think is doing fabulous work.
And so how our program works with the families is the main participant does need to be the veteran, and that's who does we enroll in the program. And then with their veteran comes their spouses and their children. And so with that, we do also help with the spouses and the children when we get them into housing. But a really actually cool part of our program that not a lot of people are aware of is our program actually works with victims of domestic violence. And so what we do is any household that's actually participating in our program who is fleeing a domestic violence situation receives special consideration regarding our supportive services. This consideration is designed for any participant fleeing a domestic violence situation midstream during their time that they have been participating in our program, such as that if the original household that began with us, the husband, which could, or the wife that could be the veteran, breaks apart, the victim of the domestic violence can stay with our program and we can offer our assistance and housing and start the period of, we call it the tolling period, which would be the time that they start with us. We'd start all over again and help them with their temporary assistance in their housing as well.
And that service would follow the person who was considered the victim of the whatever the domestic abuse situation was?
Yes, they don't actually have to be the actual veteran. They just have to be introduced into our program as the part of the household with the veteran. But once they're in our program, if there is a situation with domestic violence, the actual victim, who does not have to be the veteran, can stay with our program and still continue with our temporary financial assistance. Mm-hmm. So that's a really good, cool part of our program that not a lot of the community knows. And so it's just something really proud that we're able to say that we do.
Fantastic. So then I want to come back to something that you said earlier, Eric, about vets being a very proud group and having a lot of very specific special skills. What are some of the barriers to someone who is just returning from a tour of duty that they face when they come back? Like, are there issues just even if they're perfectly ready to integrate back into society, are there any issues with having been gone for a period of time?
Well, I think with any, the main thing is just the readjustment period. I feel from my own personal experience and seeing other veterans is that when you come off a tour of duty, if you come off just serving 4 years stateside, there is definitely this adjustment where you're not in that sort of lifestyle anymore. You're not regimented. You have your own freedom. And it takes sometimes people a little while to just feel, okay, I don't have someone telling me I need to shine my boots this morning or when I need to go eat, you know, and that can be a little rough. Some people it's harder to get through than others. But I think that's part of the biggest thing. But if you're talking about veterans that are coming back from tours of duty, that's, you know, it really depends on what they've done and what they've seen and how it affects them. And luckily in our area, we have all those services that can help them, readjustment, counseling, family assistance. So I think that's the biggest thing.
Well, and I was thinking too, I know it's maybe a bad analogy, but I know a lot of women that have had kids and stayed home for a couple of years and then they're trying to re-enter the job market. So I'm a little curious. I know there are protections in place for folks in the military that go to do a tour of duty and are coming back and re-entering the workplace. But is that still something that you feel is a struggle sometimes for people, or are jobs actually like held for them, if that makes sense?
Ooh, that's a very complicated issue.
That's a good question.
A hard one here. So there is this thing called USARA law, and there is actually USARA advocates that basically this law is to, they're in place that if a National Guard person or a reservist were to get called up, their job would be held. And there are certain restrictions that they are allowed, depending on how long they've gone and when they come back, they're allowed to have that job, and then there's some more. The job was further along, they were allowed to get placements for that. And right now I'm talking with my hands, so I apologize. So there is definitely a lot of stuff in place for veterans, especially because we're in this area, we don't have any active duty bases. The biggest one is up in Great Falls and Maelstrom. So we have a lot of National Guardists who fall under this characterization. And a lot of people don't know this. They think that just because I've gone, because I got called up for tour of duty, I'm going to lose my job. No, there is policies and procedures out there to protect those sort of veterans.
And when you say call your local advocate, if you feel like you might be facing some of this discrimination in the workplace, my question for you is not, having been in the military, does a person know who their advocate is? Or are you saying, call me at Bozeman Job Services, my name is Eric Beal?
Well, luckily in our community, we're very interconnected, so you could call your local job service, you could call VOA, you can call the Veterans Court, you can call the Veteran Service Officers. Everyone would know how to get a hold of your local USARA officer. If you are tech savvy, you can also Google it too, and I'm pretty sure you can find something.
All right, thanks. USARA, I got it. So then I guess my next question is, so when we think about veterans, is it mostly folks that are moving to Bozeman? I mean, I know we're a huge, obviously our population is, I would call it exploding, even though we're a pretty small town, but is it veterans moving here? Is it mostly folks returning or a little bit of both?
And I guess I would say it's both. The population of veterans in Montana and in Bozeman is actually pretty high per capita. So certainly we have people coming back to Montana that have served in the military, but we also have lots of people moving in. Mm-hmm. It's a great place to retire.
Mm-hmm. So in the last year, our program has worked with 100 vets. In Bozeman alone. We also have a program that's out in Wyoming. That's actually one of the bigger Volunteers of America program is out in Wyoming. And out in Wyoming and Montana alone, we've helped more than 1,200 veterans with housing in this last year. So I think, coming from what Renee says, I think it's like a 50-50 if people are moving, if vets are moving here or moving out of our areas. I think they're moving in and they're staying, but then also when they're learning that it's hard to find rent here, mm-hmm. It's like, well, I gotta move. Because this is a really hard area to have just a standard rental.
One of the first things that we work on when people come into court is that they have stable housing, just mm-hmm. because you need stable housing to improve on other areas in your life. And it is hard to find stable housing in this area. Even if you have the money, it's hard even to find something that's open. The rental market is just tight. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, on that note, I know in the last 2 years, I've communicated to a lot of veterans out of state via email and just trying to set them up to figure out, like a typical email would be on this lines of, hey, I've heard great things about Bozeman, I wanted to move there, what do you, can you help the housing? And then I'd get into speech about, okay, we need to find a house and go from there. So I get a lot of people like that, but also on the other part of my job is that I work with the veterans who are going to school under the Chapter 31, which is just basically if you have a disability through the VA, you're entitled to different education benefits. And I help them through the assessments process while they're going through school. And that right there, I see a lot of veterans getting right from discharge or about 3 or 4 years from discharge who are moving from different parts of the state coming to this area right here. So, I mean, as Renee said, it's 50-50. You'll see them. We're just exploding, which is a good thing, you know.
Well, and when you talk about going to school, then if there's a veteran that's using those education benefits at MSU, there's a great veteran support center at the college that they should contact.
And what would that be called?
Veteran Support it's Center.
Veteran Support Center at MSU.
I think it's like, what's the VA services there?
Google.
But yeah. Brandy Burke mm-hmm. and Joe Schumacher yeah. are the two people to contact. They are unbelievable. I was just out there last week, and the stuff that they're doing for their vets is mm-hmm. just crazy. They are so hands-on. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of referrals through the MSU for help, temporary assistance, and so we work really closely with them.
And I want to ask, because it sounds like with folks that are moving here, do you, in your any of your roles, do you work with people who are not currently residents of our city, our county, our state that want to eventually get here, or do you just kind of give them some general advice and tell them after they arrive here to be helpful?
Oh, no, I'll work with anyone. I mean, I don't pigeonhole. You have to be, you know, foot in the ground here in Gallatin County before I can help them. So, I mean, I'll definitely help anyone that's looking to come here. Because, I mean, more knowledge is power. The more stuff you know, the better education decision you can make. So, yeah, I'll help anyone.
Yeah, and with our program, we will support any veteran that's wanting to be moving to this area. We also work with vets out in Livingston. We have our jurisdiction is basically to the border of Arbutus, because we have service coordinators all across Montana. So if there is a veteran that is considering moving to Bozeman but then thinks that they may want to move out to Kalispell, then we have a service coordinator out there that we can get them in contact with. So that's the cool thing about our program, is we have different areas that are already set up with service coordinators that we just have to make a phone call and say, hey, we've got this vet here. This is, you know, we've done their enrollment for them. Let's just transfer them over. So it's really easy for vets to move along our state.
And when it comes to housing and moving around, we've talked about how difficult that is. We haven't talked about the importance of housing. I mean, well, no, that's not true. At the very beginning, you were talking about how that's the number one thing people need to worry about. But why do you think it's more important to worry about housing than it is to worry about having a job or possibly having surgery or anything like that?
I would definitely answer that question. The reason why I like to have people stress about housing first is because we have such an open job market right now. There is so many. In our office alone, we have, I think, over 1,200 open jobs. So employers they need good employees. They need employees, period. And I think in this area right now, you can get a job walking down the street, because every business has, you know, now hiring here. So that's why I tell people, it's because it's so, the housing market is so small that you might be looking at a house to rent today and 3 hours later it's gone. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking for a job, you can spend 2 hours walking around and you have five different job offers. So that's why I try to tell people to make sure you have a place to live first, or at least have a good idea of what you want to do. And then, you know, work on the job stuff.
So with our program, just to put out there too, like the VA graciously is, our program's granted, fund granted through the VA. So without the VA, we wouldn't have a program that would exist. So the VA's policy on housing first is more of as the primary intervention working with people experiencing homelessness. The housing first approach demonstrates that a homeless individual or household's first and primary need is to obtain stable housing, and that the other issues impacting the household can and should be addressed as housing is obtained. So that's just what the policy is that we follow, and it works every time. Get them into a home, and then they can help look for a job and get the other things that they need to be sustained.
Well, and so you're saying, Krista, that it's not necessarily just the Bozeman area, but it's kind of across the country. It's best practices to make sure that somebody has stable housing before trying to help them with any other barriers they might be coming across.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yes, correct.
I love it. Thank you. So speaking of that, helping them overcome those barriers, the Volunteers of America, you keep mentioning temporary assistance and starting programs and that sort of thing. How do you help veterans and their families with housing? Is it actual monetary value? Is it just helping them with the search? Is it, and I hear temporary. What is temporary?
Oh, that is a good question. What is temporary? So how our program works, I'll set it up as if we had a vet that veteran came into our program. What we would do is, our program is income based, so we would have to look at their income and the average medium income of our Gallatin County. There's a certain range. So the veteran and the family of the household, they do have to fall under that certain range. Once that's established, then what we do is we enroll them into our program. There is, obviously, there's paperwork that's involved. It is a grant-funded program, so we do have to have, you know, our numbers and T's, all that stuff crossed. So once they've been accepted into our program, which can take within 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. We have great supervisors in all of our areas that are just ready, you know, ready and willing to take a look at our paperwork and say, yep, approved. So then what we do is we set them up with a case management. So we do every bi-weekly, we meet with our vets, make sure that they are looking for work, and they're also like stomping the grounds looking for a place to live. We assist with that, but we do want our veterans to be, you know, working hard for them to look for a place to live as well. We do set them up with, HRDC has a great housing program that they set up for anybody, not just our veterans, that they can, you know, work towards on what landlords are looking for and help with their credit history. So if our vets are having problems looking for places to live, then we can set them up with those different programs as well. But what we do is we do outreach, we do case management with our veterans, but then also with the temporary financial assistance, we offer security deposits to our landlords, one-time application fees. If a veteran needs to fill out an application and there's a fee to it, we will provide that payment for the veteran. Then we also help with rent, month to month of rent. And so how our grant is set up, we don't know, you know, how much funding we're going to have. So we do work on a month to month basis with our vets. And there's a percentage that we work with them. So we try to have where our vets can work towards becoming self-sufficient. And so there's a certain percentage, you know, the first month could be 100% that will help pay. But then as each month goes down, we work with them and see what they're able to afford, comfortably afford. And by the end of our program, that they will be self-sufficient and be able to support themselves and be working.
So speaking of affordable housing, it's definitely tough for pretty much everybody who doesn't already own a home in this area. And my family and I, when we finally decided we wanted to, you know, move back to this area after we've been in Texas for a couple of years, we moved out to Belgrade because it's a little bit cheaper. When you're helping folks find housing, do you mostly just look in Bozeman? Do you look further afield? Does it make a difference in if they have reliable transportation? Kind of how does that work? And I guess I should ask the same question about jobs, because when it comes to housing, it's obviously nice to have be near your place of employment.
I'll take that. I think each veteran's case by case. I mean, if you are working in Bozeman, it'd be love to live in Bozeman as well, but sometimes that's just not an option here right now. So I think Krista can back me up by saying this. A lot of the starting to push out different areas like Belgrade, probably even Manhattan, I would think, and Three Forks as well. Yeah, so I mean, the dream is to live in Bozeman, I think. Well, maybe not for everyone. I know veterans who want to live a little bit further out of the town, but I think it's a lot of case-by-case situations.
Yeah, that's kind of how we do it. What we'll do is we'll look at where the veteran is with employment or if they're where their children are going to school. With, as Renee could probably explain, the court system, correct?
Well, and I would say for our participants, because many of them don't actually have valid driver's licenses right now, that they really need to live close to employment, because the Streamline is certainly a reasonable transportation source, but not for really long distance traveling. So
I just have to say this, because this is a really, really cool part of our program too. So if we have a veteran that's homeless and they're living in the car, and Bozeman is crazy expensive to live here, and so what we can offer them is we have a program out in Billings, and we also have one out in Wyoming, and it's our program out there. There's a place called Independence Hall, and it's transitional housing for male veterans, and it goes up to 2 years. And what it does out there is we have a caseworker, a supportive services caseworker out there, and what she does out there is she has the vets can stay there, and they can have a roof over their head while we here in Bozeman are looking for them for a place to live. And so it's we can provide them transportation out to Billings so that they can be out in Independence Hall awaiting for housing here in Bozeman so that they're not living in their cars. They have another one out in Wyoming as well that they offer to veterans, and it is just for males. I'm not sure if they're going to be opening one up for the females, but they do just have the ones for the males right now at this moment.
Good hard question for you. Is that for families as well? Or is it males with kids or just individuals?
I believe it's just for individuals. Yeah, and especially I do also know that if they do have service animals, they don't have service animals. They are able to house their service animals there. It's just separate areas. Mm-hmm. But it's just for the single vets.
And all of you keep talking about veterans that you serve. That's fantastic. Can somebody define what a veteran is for me and how they qualify for your program?
That or maybe seems that's a like really it would hard be question. An easy question. So it does seem like it would be an easy question, but there are different categories of veterans. So there's service veterans, and there are veterans that have been stationed overseas, so that is a different type of a veteran. So it's actually a fairly complicated question. For our program, we take service veterans and actually people who are in the National Guard and the Reserves right now is who we will take in our program. We are able to look at veterans who have honorable discharges, general discharges, and actually less than honorable discharges on a case-by-case basis. Just kind of, so if you've got a veteran with a less than honorable discharge that had that discharge because of addiction issues while they were in the military and they are working on those addiction issues at this point, that might be a veteran that we would be able to work with, although the services become harder to provide because then they're not eligible for benefits.
So it sounds a little bit like Vets Court will serve most folks who have been involved in the military in some way at some point.
Yes, it has the ability to. There's really a screening process, so it has to be, we look at community safety and also our ability to help the veterans as well. But yes, if they have served, they would be eligible to apply.
And let's talk about job services. Obviously, you help community members of all kinds, and so it's not, I'm sure that, do you require paperwork for additional help for those vets that are coming through, or is it more like you're just going to help anybody who walks through the door, but you're better suited to help a veteran?
Okay, so let's see if I can't make this as few as words as possible because I can get really lost in the weeds. So first and foremost is I work with Chapter 31 veterans who are going into school, so I help them do a career assessment. And on top of that, I can help any veteran who meets a certain list of criteria that we have. We have a screening tool in our office. And those are pretty basic questions, you know, if they're service-connected, honorable discharge, low income, homeless. To meet any of those, I can work with them under my DVOP hat. If they don't, since I'm half-time DVOP, I'm also employment specialist, I can work with them under my employment specialist hat. So the long skinny short is I can work with any veteran. And if I'm not there in the office for whatever reason, anyone in our office are trained to help work with veterans. So the Bozeman Job Service can help any veteran left or right.
What is a Chapter 31 veteran?
All the hard questions.
In a nutshell, just a few words.
A few words.
Coordinator asked
that. I know, right? Where's Joe Schumacher here from MSU? All right, so Chapter 31 refers to an education benefit. Basically, if you were injured in the military with at least a 10% rating and it affects your employment capabilities, you can apply for Chapter 31, and the referral goes from the VA up in Helena, and that comes down to me, and that's how I work with them. So. Yeah, because there's a lot of different chapter education benefits. So that's one of them that I work with. Hard question.
And what about Volunteers of America? I know you were telling me earlier that Volunteers of America does a lot of things, not just with vets, but how does somebody qualify as a vet for your program?
So they need to have been active duty, and it's got to be at least one day active duty. We unfortunately do not work with our program with vets that have, or with the reserve, so unless they've been called up to participate in, I don't know what it's called, Eric, when a vet gets called up by the president?
Title 10, active duty orders.
Then we can work with vets like that, but it's just vets that have at least one day active duty. We work with all types of veterans, but we do not work with dishonorably discharged or court-martialed.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question here. This is kind of interesting. So when you said one day active duty, I know it's different for VA purposes, but does that one day active duty, does that qualify like one day in basic training or one day when they're actually done basic training and go to their unit and all that stuff? Is there any distinction between the two?
I can't answer that question. believe that they have to be active one duty after basic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if they've just done basic and then they've, you know, been mm-hmm. released for certain reasons on basic, they don't qualify, but it has to be one day, feet on the ground. Yeah, you agree, Eric?
Yeah,
okay, so I passed the test. Yeah. My supervisors would be so proud of me.
That's just It's sort of sweaty, and I'm like, oh, I didn't know this.
It's a tricky question.
Yeah, it is.
And I have another tricky question for you, which is, now we're discussing vets, how do they prove that they have been one day active duty or that they've done anything? Is there documentation or paperwork that they would need for any of the programs? And we'll start with talking about vets court, so if they're in the justice system.
There is this thing called the DD-214, which and that is the document that details the person's separation from the military. So that's the easiest way to determine service.
And if we have a vet come to our office that unfortunately does not have their DD-214 because of circumstances, they are living in their car and all their gear is wet, you know, there's major circumstances, then they could have a VA card. If they don't have a VA card, then we definitely have people that we can contact, the VA officers, that we can contact that can help us find out that information as well.
Yeah, so the DD-214 is the holy grail for veterans benefits. As Krista said, if they don't have it, there's a very easy way to get it. It might take 2 to 3 weeks, but we can definitely request it from the National Archives.
And when you say it could take 2 to 3 weeks, are those services pending then until such a time as that comes through? I see some head nods.
Yeah, our services are pending, basically, because that's what the proof that we need, just to see what, you know, if they are active. But we also, if they're pending, we will also branch out to different services to see if they can help the veterans while that information is pending for us to get that.
And I'm learning a lot here today because none of my family has served in the military except my little brother who was in the National Guard for a while. And I didn't realize before, and I'm just catching on now, that if that's somebody who has left the military, what about those folks that are active duty? If their families, for example, are struggling with housing and they've been called up, do your programs still work with them?
Yeah, that's kind of a rare situation. But I mean, it does happen. I just haven't seen it a lot in our offices. And I can help them, absolutely. A lot of VA benefits are based upon the veteran status, as in they've released from services. But there is a lot of services in the Valley that help active duty. Like the National Guard, there is a Family Support Center assistance specialist out there at the Army that can help the National Guard people while they're in service. So, yeah, a lot of the VA benefits, it depends upon the actual veteran status.
That makes absolute sense, I suppose, because it's kind of the folks that are currently in the military versus folks that are leaving, or have left, I should say. So, thank you. So it definitely sounds like there are a lot of great services in the Gallatin Valley to help veterans, but is this just something that we only see in this area that doesn't exist in other areas of Montana? And I know you've mentioned a few places, like I feel like you said something about Great Falls and something about Wyoming, definitely, but is rural areas, are they just kind of out of luck? What about the Vets Court?
So the Vets Court, there are veterans courts in 4 cities in Montana right now. There's one in Missoula, there's one in Great Falls, there's one in Billings, and there's one in Bozeman. And there are also veterans treatment courts, I believe, in every state at this point. So as far as rural goes, it does get harder to serve folks in rural areas because you don't have the concentration of vets that will create enough vets to participate actually in a treatment court, which is a little smaller percentage of vets. There are treatment courts in the state that try and work to serve people remotely. It is a difficult road.
So then I have a follow-up question to that before I let everyone else answer, which is, that means then that you don't work remotely here in Bozeman with folks from outside the area?
We do serve one person who lives outside the area, but honestly, he lives in Whitehall and he drives into court. We don't have the technical ability right now to serve people in really remote areas. And especially in the first parts of that treatment, when they really need a lot of support, it's really hard to provide those services remotely.
But if someone was willing to drive here, they could definitely
be
getting it from anywhere. That's fantastic. I like that. What about Volunteers of America? You mentioned Wyoming. Is it just Wyoming and Montana, that's it?
So in Montana, we have our programs in Billings, Bozeman, Butte, Great Falls, Helena, Missoula, and Kalispell. And then in Montana, we have 12 service coordinators. We have 2 SOAR coordinators. SOARs is where we have their caseworkers for Social Security with the vets. They help with Social Security. And we have 1 program coordinator in Montana. And then in Wyoming, it's in Casper, Cheyenne, Riverton, Rock Springs, and Sheridan. And Wyoming has 9 service coordinators and 1 program coordinator.
I like it. And of course, Bozeman Job Service. I'm guessing you serve the Bozeman area. But I'm also going to guess that there are other job services around the area, or around the country. And do they have similar positions to yours elsewhere?
So yeah, absolutely. In Montana, all of the major cities have a job service. We do have some satellite offices in some of the rural areas. We did have a office in Livingston up to about a year ago. We do cover that area. We have scheduled outreach to go out to the smaller areas just for Livingston right now, but we cover pretty much the surrounding area for Gallatin Valley. There is other people in other offices that are just like me. We have a couple full-time DBOPs in Helena and Missoula, but all of the major cities do have a position similar to me. So there is other veteran representatives that can help veterans in these job services.
Mm-hmm. And a random question. Eric, I know you'd mentioned you've been in the military, and I don't know about the two of you, Kristen and Renee, but do you think that it's helpful to have been in the military to provide services to this particular group, or is it just something that you kind of learn about?
Well, I always think it's a good icebreaker. So I can, you know, we can always kind of jar about where you served, what has the best chow, and, you know, who has the best base. But I don't think it's necessary at all. I think even if you didn't serve, you can definitely still be empathetic to people's problems and help them out.
And speaking of helping folks out, I know Krista at least brought a story about one person being helped through Volunteers of America, and I would be happy to have you share that. And the other two of you can think if there's any stories you want to share. Of course, keeping privacy and all that. And maybe you don't have one to share. I don't know. But here you are, Krista.
So I actually have a letter that was written by a Navy vet, and it was written to one of our coordinators at Billings. So I wanted to share the letter. Obviously, I'm not going to say any names, but I just wanted to share the letter. So he writes, "I would like to thank you personally and Volunteers of America for all you've done for me. The assistance was a godsend. I was homeless and felt my life had no meaning. When I first met you, you made me smile and built my self-esteem. When you put your hand out to shake mine and said, thank you for serving our country. I suffer from PTSD and more, but when I was at my lowest and about to end my life, I called you and you answered. Your dedication to veterans and VOA is outstanding and you deserve some kind of recognition. I credit you for saving my life as I was suicidal, and your compassion and direction saved this war veteran." And so that was sent off to one of our coordinators at Billings, and so I just thought that was a fun little story to share that he really helped this vet.
I really like that, and I think also I'm getting the sense from all of you that you really love what you do. Krista was a little early today, and I had a chance to chat with her, and I think you said you'd been in your position 6 months?
Yeah, well, since March.
Since March?
Yeah.
And she was also like, and I'll be here forever. So clearly, she feels like what she's doing is making a difference and thinks that it's very important. And that's fantastic. We should all be so fulfilled in our lives. Does anybody else have a story that they want to share, or why it's meaningful to you that the work you are doing is making some sort of impact and that you feel it's important for you to continue doing?
I don't have a specific story, but I will say that watching court on Tuesday mornings, it has been a phenomenal experience. It is for me quite rewarding to watch the changes that people are making and the support that the veterans feel, and sometimes for the first time from authority figures in the justice system. So I have seen changes. I just don't know that I have stories I can share without breaking confidentiality.
Absolutely, and I do have a question before I let you tell us about your experience, Eric. But my question for Vets Court is, Krista had also mentioned to me that it's open to the public, and I don't, what does this mean? You mentioned Tuesday mornings, what does it look like? Tell us about this.
Yes, it is. Vets Court is 9 on Tuesday mornings. It is open to the public. It is a small courtroom, so people could certainly give me a call if they wanted to attend, and if there were a lot of people, we could maybe schedule those out, just because otherwise we're going to be hanging from the rafters. Yeah, literally sitting on each other's laps. It's getting very tight on Tuesday mornings, so they should call first.
And are you always there on Tuesday mornings, or you mentioned folks having kind of that support from the authority figures? Who's there?
The treatment team meets every Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock. That is not an open meeting. That's a confidential meeting. And on our treatment team, we have a defense attorney, a prosecuting attorney, VA treatment provider, a non-VA treatment provider, a police representative, a sheriff's representative. I am there, the case manager is there, and the judge is there for the treatment team. And then during court, I have not agreed to be there every Tuesday for the rest of my life, but I am there most Tuesdays. And honestly, it'd be easier just to be there. So I'm there most Tuesdays as well.
That is a lot of support. That's fantastic. I love that. All right, then, Eric, the question again bounces to you. Why do you think what you're doing is important, or do you?
Why I think what I'm doing is important? Absolutely. It just reminds me of a recent story I had. I had a veteran come in, and he has been out of work for a little while, and he had trouble finding a job because it wasn't paying enough for his medical bills, and he had a lot of medical conditions. And I was sitting with him, and I was trying to figure out, you know, when he served and why he wasn't in the VA healthcare system, because he thought he wasn't eligible because he didn't think he had enough years in. But with a little collaboration with the veteran service officers here, we had to find his DD-214, you know, the holy grail piece of information, found out he was eligible for VA healthcare. So we were able to get him a role in the healthcare system, and then we could actually find him a job where he didn't have to only find something that had healthcare benefits. Mm-hmm. So it actually opened up the job market fantastic for him, and he's working well now and a happy man.
So we only have a few minutes left, but before we go, I wanted to ask, if a person wanted to engage more with your organizations that work with veterans, what are ways they could learn about or volunteer or be involved in these programs?
Certainly anyone that's interested in the Veterans Court could give me a call. One use that we have for volunteers, and especially veteran volunteers, is as mentors for the participants in our program. Each participant is matched with a mentor that helps guide them through the process, but also act as a sounding board and do some of the problem solving, and honestly teach life skills. Some of the, especially the younger folks that went into the military at 18 and then came out, are very good at being soldiers, may not know how to do laundry, honestly, or cook or budget or do any of those things. So all of those things are the things that the mentors can help the veterans with, as well as just being a place for them to talk.
And on that note, when you're talking about mentors, is it generally somebody who's middle age? Is it generally somebody who's been a vet themselves? What requirements are there for to be a mentor?
In order to be a mentor, you do have to have been a vet. And actually, our program serves, we have right now a 21-year-old and a 7 to 76-year-old. So any age is fine. We really look at interests and other things. And branches of service, as I found, are sometimes very important to people as well, mm-hmm. when we're looking for mentors, because there is no ex-Marine, they're only former Marines, things like that. So they need to be veterans. They don't necessarily need to be a certain age or a certain service connection, a certain branch of the military. And there are also other opportunities to volunteer as we work towards sustainability in the program as well.
And Bozeman Job Services, I know, doesn't necessarily have volunteer opportunities, and its name is misleading, but we'll forgive you.
Yes.
Volunteers of America.
Of
the Northern Rockies does not organize volunteers. That having been said, if a person wants to learn more about what you do, is there a way they could do that?
I can say, if they want to learn more about what our office does for veterans or what I help veterans, they're more than welcome to come down. We have all kinds of plenty of information. You don't even need to talk to someone. You can just come in, and I have a veteran wall there that has all the information. So if you're a little gun-shy and don't want to talk to someone, you can just come on in and peek and grab a flyer and just look what we have.
That same goes with our program, too. So currently in Bozeman, there's two of us. There's myself, and then there's the other service coordinator, Mike Kuzman. We're always in our office, and if we're not in our office, our phone number is on our door. If we're out doing outreach, you know, pounding the grounds, looking for veterans, that anybody can just come in and chat with us. We also have a website that they can go on, Volunteers of America website. And it'll be all across, but you can find Bozeman. But other than that, yeah, we have a cell phone that we answer as well. So if we have vets that are calling us after hours and stuff too. So.
And I would say too, if there are people out there that are wanting to volunteer and help veterans, there's lots of organizations out there that do take volunteers. So look around, or be the person that says yes when Eric calls you up and says, will you take a veteran employee?
So it does sound like one other good option if you wanted to just learn more or work with this population or volunteer with this population is reach out to any of the folks we had presenting with us here today. We had Krista with Volunteers of America, Eric, who's over at Bozeman Job Services, and Renee, who's the Vets Court Coordinator. So thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you all next time.